Can you actually agree to something without ever saying yes?
That's an interesting question.
Well, that's exactly what we're going to dive into today.
Okay.
With the case Gupta v. Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, LLC,
right.
We're going to see how sometimes silence can actually be taken as consent.
Interesting.
Particularly in these arbitration agreements we see more and more.
Yeah.
So let's get into it. This case is about Rajesh Gupta.
Okay.
He was a financial advisor with Morgan Stanley,
mm-hmm.
but he also served in the Navy JAG Corps.
Oh, wow.
Now, back in 2015,
okay.
Morgan Stanley, they decided to change up their employee dispute resolution program.
Right.
And they made a pretty big change. They said, from now on, everything's going to arbitration, mandatory.
Wow, okay.
And that meant everything, like even discrimination claims.
Big change.
And to let everyone know, they sent out an email
mm-hmm.
to all their employees, including Gupta.
Right.
Explained the changes, told them how to opt out if they wanted to.
Okay.
Here's where it gets interesting.
All right.
Gupta never opted out.
Hmm.
But he claims he never even saw the email.
Oh.
Fast forward 2 years later.
Okay.
He ends up suing Morgan Stanley.
Oh.
And this is where the whole legal battle really kicks off.
So what happened? Did the court believe him?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can silence really be seen as giving your consent?
Especially when a policy like that changes.
Exactly. So did they side with Morgan Stanley?
They did.
They did.
And in their ruling, they highlighted this important principle about contract law in Illinois.
Okay.
And that is silence can be seen as acceptance if it's reasonable under the circumstances.
Hmm.
So the court felt in this case, Morgan Stanley, they did what they needed to do. They gave Gupta clear notice,
right.
reasonable chance to opt out,
yeah.
and they saw him continuing to work after that deadline
right.
as something called objective assent.
Okay, so break that down a little. What does objective assent really mean in this context?
Basically, it means his actions spoke louder than words, regardless of what he said his intention was.
So it's not about what someone's thinking, it's about what they actually do.
Exactly. That's the distinction the court made.
Now, something I was thinking about.
Yeah.
Gupta's original employment agreement, the one from 2013,
okay.
it already had an arbitration clause in it.
Right.
Did the court talk about how that played into this update from 2015?
They did. The court actually drew a clear line between the two agreements. So the 2013 agreement had what's called a merger clause.
Okay.
That means it was supposed to be like the final word on the topics it covered.
Right.
But, and this is key, it didn't say future arbitration agreements weren't allowed.
Hmm.
So the court saw the 2015 update, this CARE program, mm-hmm. as a separate agreement.
Oh, that's interesting. So even though there was already something about arbitration.
Right.
This new agreement kind of stood on its own?
Exactly.
It seems like you really got to pay attention to the fine print in these things.
Absolutely. The details really matter.
Now, something else I was wondering.
Yeah.
This is a federal arbitration case, right?
It is.
Why would they even consider state contract law in this?
That's where the Federal Arbitration Act, or FAA, comes in.
Okay.
The FAA, generally, it's pro-arbitration.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this thing. It says courts have to use state contract law
right.
to figure out if the arbitration agreement is actually valid in the first place.
Interesting.
So in this case, they had to look at Illinois law to see if Gupta's silence was really him agreeing to this.
So even in a federal case, state law can play a big role.
It does, yeah. It creates this interesting mix of federal and state law that can affect things a lot.
It does. Now, for our listeners out there
yeah.
who are mostly lawyers and law students,
mm-hmm.
you might think, well, this is all about finance guys and big companies. What's it got to do with me?
Right.
But there's something bigger here for all of us, I think.
Definitely. This case shows how even simple ideas like consent can get really complicated legally.
Yeah.
For lawyers, especially those dealing with employment or contract law, understanding how federal and state law work together and how important clear language is in agreements, that's crucial.
Really important stuff.
Yeah. And this case is like a real life example of how those things can shape what happens in court.
So it's not just about this one case, it's about the principles behind it.
Exactly. And that's why this deep dive is so helpful for lawyers and law students. You can apply these insights to all sorts of legal situations, not just ones with arbitration.
Now, the court mentioned a three-factor test to figure out if silence is reasonable as acceptance.
Right.
What are those three things?
Sure. First, was there a clear offer? In Gupta's case, that Morgan Stanley email, it clearly laid out the new agreement and how to opt out.
Right. Straightforward.
Second, was there a real chance to say no? Again, Gupta had that deadline to opt out if he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly, they look at the relationship. Did it make sense for Morgan Stanley to expect a response from Gupta based on how they work together?
So because he was an employee, it's expected he'd pay attention to company policies?
Yeah.
It wouldn't be reasonable for him to just claim he didn't know.
Exactly. The court pointed out that in those employment relationships, employees have a duty to keep up with company policies, especially ones affecting their rights.
Makes sense. This is all becoming much clearer now. But I have one more question. What about claims under USERRA?
Right.
Gupta was trying to use those rights, and they're meant to protect people in the service.
Good point. This goes to the heart of what these arbitration agreements can cover. So the court was clear. Unless Congress specifically says a certain type of claim can't be arbitrated, it usually can't be.
Okay.
In this situation, USERRA claims were included in what Morgan Stanley's agreement covered.
So even though USERRA is a federal law to protect service members, the court said those claims could still go to arbitration because Congress hadn't specifically excluded them.
Exactly. And this is a really important point for anyone dealing with arbitration. Know what claims are covered by the agreement and if there are any legal exceptions that might apply to your situation.
It seems like there are a lot of nuances to these agreements, and someone could easily give up certain rights without knowing if they aren't careful.
Definitely something to be aware of for both employers and employees.
This is certainly a cautionary tale. Okay, so we've talked about how silence can be like agreement, especially for employees. But what about all these gig workers we see more and more?
Yeah, the gig economy, it's a whole different ballgame, legally speaking.
Right. Their jobs are so different from the usual 9-to-5.
Totally. And thinking about this Gupta case, if courts are saying silence equals consent for regular employees, what does that mean for gig workers where things are less clear?
It's like, do they even realize what they might be agreeing to? They might not know their rights as well as someone with a more traditional job.
Exactly. And how much notice is really enough for them? Is an email to their personal account enough, especially when they're juggling all these different gigs and maybe not checking email all the time?
And what about those apps that change their terms of service constantly?
Oh, all the time. It's like, is it even fair to expect them to keep up with all that?
No way. It's a whole different thing from dealing with a regular company.
It makes people wonder, are they really agreeing to these things, or are they just accepting them because they need the work?
Right. They don't really have a choice.
And it's not just about arbitration. It's about all those terms that control how they work with those platforms.
Like how much they get paid, how disputes are handled, even who's responsible if something goes wrong.
All super important stuff.
It seems like gig workers need more protection, legally, in this new world of work. The old laws might not cut it.
I agree. Lawmakers and courts need to figure out how to deal with this as more and more people work this way.
Definitely. Okay, let's zoom out a bit. We see implied consent at work, but what about just everyday life? Are there other examples we might not even realize?
Oh, for sure. It's everywhere. We just don't think about it.
Like what?
Well, driving, for example.
Okay.
When you get behind the wheel, you're basically saying you'll follow the rules and take a breathalyzer test if asked.
Huh. True. I never thought of it that way. But that's kind of obvious, right? What about stuff that's less clear-cut?
Well, what about online privacy?
Oh, yeah.
By using a website or an app, you're often agreeing to their data collection, even if you haven't specifically said yes.
And those privacy policies, they're so long and complicated. Who reads them?
Exactly. You just click agree without knowing what you're signing up for.
Makes you wonder if it's really consent if you don't even understand what you're agreeing to.
Yeah, that's a good question.
It feels like this implied consent thing can be a bit tricky, especially with technology moving so fast and our data being collected all the time.
Definitely. It just shows how important it is to be informed and aware of how what we do or don't do can be seen as consent in different situations.
As we finish up this part of our deep dive, I think the big takeaway for our listeners is that implied consent is a big deal. It's not just about contracts. It affects so many parts of our lives and can have big legal consequences.
You got it. It's all about being mindful of how our choices, whether we say something or not, can impact our rights and responsibilities in this crazy world where technology and law are always changing.
All right, so we've covered a lot of ground here. We talked about how silence can mean consent at work, the whole gig economy thing, and even how this implied consent idea pops up in regular life, like driving or being online.
Yeah, it's fascinating, right? This concept, it's everywhere, but we don't always notice it. But it can have a huge impact on our legal rights and what we're responsible for.
It really makes you think twice about all the things we might be saying yes to without even realizing it, especially online where everything we do is tracked and our data is being collected all the time.
Exactly. And as we saw in the Gupta case, that can have some pretty serious consequences. You might think you haven't given consent, but the law might see it differently.
So I guess that saying silence is golden doesn't always apply in the legal world?
Nope, not when it comes to contracts and agreements. Better to be safe and make sure everyone knows what you're thinking, both in what you say and what you write down.
So what advice would you give to our listeners, most of whom are lawyers or are studying law, to help them avoid these implied consent traps for themselves and their clients?
I'd say the most important thing is to be super careful when looking at any agreement or contract. Don't just skim it. Take your time to understand all the details, especially those parts about arbitration, settling disputes, or giving up any rights. And if something isn't clear, just ask.
So it's not just about understanding the words. You also need to actively say yes or no.
Exactly. Don't rely on silence or assume anything. If you're not sure, ask. And if you don't agree with something, say so in writing. Having a record of everything is super important. It can protect you later on from someone saying you agreed to something you didn't.
So documentation is key.
Absolutely. It's like a safety net for you and your clients.
This has been a really insightful deep dive. We've learned that silence can be a powerful form of consent, gotten to the nitty-gritty of arbitration, and even touched on how the gig economy is changing things legally.
The Gupta case really shows how what we do or don't do can have legal consequences we might not expect. We need to understand how consent works and protect ourselves.
Absolutely. As we wrap up, we want to leave you with this. In a world that's becoming more digital every day, where our data is collected constantly and our online activities are tracked, how do we make sure our consent is really informed and meaningful? Something to think about as technology and the legal landscape keep changing. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.